Good morning. I'd like to call this special meeting of the Finance Administration Committee meeting to order. Before you is the agenda. The agenda includes one item on which we will be asked to act upon, and the presentation will be made by Ms. Kissel. As we began this is a special meeting, and it was called in order to ensure that we were able to advertise the changes in fare and revenue services, as well as assure that we could advertise a docket that was as broad as possible. This would be subject to a board meeting for approval, and this is the beginning of the discussion on the budget. And with that in mind, I'm going to ask Ms. Carol Kissel if she would go ahead with the presentation, and we will have an opportunity to talk about each of the items that are part of the docket, and then to move forward.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Chairperson Hudgens. We actually have the presentation provided to the board and to the public with the attachments, as you had indicated, that would potentially go to a public docket. This presentation is to walk you through a summary level of that information. On page 3, you could skip that page, right? So as you have indicated, the potential actions the board can take to close the shortfall that we have communicated in the general manager's budget of $189 million. Some of these proposed actions require, obviously, public hearing. Fare increases do. And obviously service cuts do as well. There are some actions that do not require a public hearing but are also included in here as well. And this request is to request the authorization to the general manager to hold hearings and to solicit comments from the community regarding these options. As you had indicated, Chairperson, today Metro staff is not requesting that the board authorize a service reduction of fare increases or service cuts. We're actually only requesting that the board authorize the public hearings in order to mitigate the deficit that we're projecting for FY11. On the next page, given the projected budget gap of the $189 million in the general manager's budget, it contains recommendations to close it. However, the fare and service options in the presentation are broader in order to provide the board with a wider range of options, as you have indicated, Chairperson Hudgens. This is required since the board may not authorize more cuts than are advertised in the public notice. So we wanted to actually give a broad array of potential options to consider. Our governing structure, as you know, under the compact, mandates the requirement for public hearings in order to engage the public with this discussion. The basis of the $189 million gap has been presented in the general manager's budget, but let me summarize here in this chart. On the revenue side, the $24 million or $23.8 million that you see is due to lower ridership and parking revenues that we have projected due to a variety of reasons that we have communicated to the board in the past. The additional revenue decrease is due to advertising revenue contracts that will be lower than originally expected due to some weakened economy, as well as we are looking to last year we actually have a $13 million reserve fund from FY 2009 that we used in FY 2010 as a one-time gap closing measure. We will not have that ability for this year. And then there's another $10.6 million in other revenues, such as joint development, that we will be unable to capture to close the budget deficit. The biggest increase that we have that contributes to the $189 million gap is due to expenditures, as you can see here, $114 million. $35 million in contractual labor costs drive that number, as well as $33.9 million in pension and health and fringe benefits that we are required by law to contribute to. In addition, the growing demand for Metro access increases the cost for that mode of service year to year by $27 million for the next year. We also have third-party increases due to the accident at Fort Totten, which have increased our third-party liability and workers' comp claims, and that has also contributed to the gap. On the following page, actually, we show you a picture of what is in the general manager's budget. And this actually shows the mitigation plans that we have recommended to close the gap, most of which will be the subject of the public hearing, fare increases and service cuts. However, there's a portion that the general manager can and will take, and which is the $16.3 million that you see there, which is a continuing reductions of either headcount or service reductions that we're taking for FY11. Actually, and on that chart, I might note that the information that you have in your materials, attachment A, reflects the general manager's recommended fare increase of $89.2 million, and you can find that in attachment A and the details in there. Regarding the proposed service reductions, in the general manager's budget, we actually listed more service reductions in rail and bus than what is currently included in the proposed budget. So in the rail side, we actually included $24.3 million of rail service reductions. In the package that you have before you, I believe it says 33.5, and I apologize, we made a change early this morning to reflect what it should be in the attachment. Bus service.
Ms. Kissel?
Yes.
The attachment D is consistent with the what you're presenting then?
That's correct. The attachment is correct. It's just that the presentation here, an earlier version, had shown another number. But the attachment D is accurate. It should say $24.3 million. The bus service, attachment E, reflects a $26.5 million in rail in bus service reduction.
It does not, yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It should say, in that chart it says $26.5 million in rail service. It should say $26.5 million in bus service. I apologize. On attachment E, the $18.3 million, which is proposed in the general manager's budget, is reflected on attachment E. In addition, on attachment F, there's listed Metro Access service reductions with regard to aligning the service area within ADA compliance, and that is shrinking the boundaries 3/4 of a mile, which we have explained in detail in the attachment as well as in the general manager's budget, as well as looking at the free ride program and conditional eligibility changes.
So just to review then those few statements there, what we have as attachments include, first, all of the things that were in the general manager's budget, and then additional in each of those that go beyond what was in the general manager's
budget.
That's
correct.
And that's on service reductions as well as revenue opportunity.
It is net of revenue, that's correct. On the next page, so in the context of providing the board with the wider range of options with which to go out to advertise in a public hearing, staff has also calculated the fare impact to riders if there were no service cuts, the service cuts that I just indicated in the prior page and which are in the general manager's proposed budget. If that were the case, that is actually on attachment B and reflects the fare increases that would occur to accommodate for no service reductions. And as you can see here, this would increase rail fares by 21%. In the general manager's budget, we are proposing a 15% increase on rail, And then on it changes in terms of off-peak fares, rather than a 15% change in fares, that would increase to a 22% increase. That detail can be found in your package on attachment B. On the next page, staff has met with many stakeholders in the development of the general manager's budget. We have met with Greater Washington, the Riders Advisory Council, Metro Riders Org, as well as our local union, one of our biggest unions. We have met with them. They have provided letters of recommendations on how to close the gap. On the following page, this group, some of their suggestions with regard to revenue are reflected in the package that you have with you today. That can be seen on attachment C. Some of those recommendations with regard to fares include the ones that you see here. Peak of the peak pricing. In the general manager's budget, peak of the peak pricing was recommended at a 10-cent surcharge. The suggestions from these groups are indicating that peak of the peak could be 50 cents. Charging a differential between paper fare cards and smart trip plastic cards. Again, they recommend a differential pricing surcharge of 50 cents for that. Raising parking rates and increased reserve parking. In the general manager's proposed budget, we did not include any increases in parking rates, but this recommendation from these stakeholders have indicated that that would be possibly an option. Charging the regular peak fare from midnight to closing. Again, that was not in the general manager's budget, but it appears here on attachment C. And the last item is special event pricing, providing the general manager the ability, when there is a special event in the region, to actually have the ability to charge special event fare pricing for that.
Mr. Okay. Mr. Yule, go right ahead, and then I'll have them come in.
Charging the differential of 50 cents per trip for paper fare cards being recommended by the stakeholders, you didn't mention whether that was in the general manager's budget.
Oh, I apologize. No, that was not in the general manager's proposed budget.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Okay, I think we've solved the coffee spill problem here temporarily. Are we ready to entertain some additional thoughts on additional ways to raise revenue or at least more options to list in our notice? Okay. But I do want to propose a few additional.
Actually, I'm almost done. So the last page actually is why we're here today, is the proposed timeline management is recommending. We are recommending the board take an action today to initiate the beginning public hearings. Those public hearings would start March 22nd, and I don't have the calendar in front of me, but would go out until the beginning of April. April 8th, the board would then, staff report would be done, and the board would have time to prepare and look at some of the recommendations that were made. And then we would be able to have time to implement some of those changes before the beginning of our fiscal year. And that is the end of my report.
Thank you, Ms. Kissel. And I think as we open up for questions, the clarity of what has been presented here is first that it's a combination of first the general manager's budget, then items that allow first on the fair alternative, latitude within that fare beyond the general manager's budget all the way to the level of replacing the reductions that were made, as well as the ability to look at no reductions and other alternatives. And on the comment from both, we acknowledged earlier that we had received from the transit union some suggestions, and as well from the RAC suggestions. So we've included those here for the purpose as they affect change in revenue so that we can go to advertisement.
Yes, and may I add one item? Many of the suggestions that we received from those groups, including the union, have been published in the general manager's proposed budget and can be found, I believe it's on page 49, in detail. We summarized some of them here for this presentation.
And the last one is on Metro Access. The general manager's budget talked about limiting the radius of travel within the ADA compliance, and we've included now a variance in fare to address another option for us to be able to see it in a revenue part, as well as addressing what would be a change of not accepting that.
That's correct.
Let me just comment that we are not talking directly with both the Metro Access community as well as the RAC, and we'll have an opportunity later to do so. But by including all of their input or the input regarding those services that they have expressed interest in, we've included it in the advertising options that can be presented.
Yes.
Okay, let me go to questions. Mr. Downey.
Question. Comment and a question. First comment, I'm glad to see we will have a lot of latitude, that we're not presenting a Hobson's choice. With respect to the service cuts, as I understand it, the general manager's recommendation is a larger menu and identifies a number, but not a choice among the options.
That's correct.
Okay. So that choice, if we had to go to service, is still out there. One concern I have, I think part of what we're doing really is to get some responses from outside of this room. The timeline that's expressed here of completing the hearings on April 1 and making decisions on April 8th seems to me to be too short. I understand the issue of time that will be needed to implement, and maybe we have conversations about what's feasible and what's not, but I would not be ready to make a final decision on the 8th of April about these issues.
Can I?
Go ahead.
It is a very tight schedule. The reason why we have it on April 8th is because if there are service cuts, we actually build in time for our PIC process that we have, which takes a considerable amount of time in order to get it implemented by the end of the fiscal year.
And I would like to have a discussion about dates after we've kind of talked about what's presented here in the docket, because we do need to have enough time to have the discussion about this. And right now it's a very abbreviated calendar, and so we need to figure out when can that occur so that we can make sure, as Mr. Downey has said, we want to have as much opportunity to truly affect the most appropriate approval for the budget. Okay, Mr. Benjamin.
Ms. Hudgens, we did just get handed out the resolution that was passed last night by the Writers Advisory Council, which does, in fact, on the back, have a series of requests for fare and fee changes, and I am happy to note that all of those are included in what we consider here option C, I guess, the largest of all the options. The other point that I think you made that's very important is we are really going out to public hearing, if we approve this, doing what we should be doing. That is, we are leaving a whole bunch of different alternatives out there for our public to comment on, with our action to be within that large total. So we're not going out there saying, this is the answer, please tell us yes or no, and then we're going to do it. We're actually going out with almost $240 million worth of fair service and policy changes that would allow us to then close a $189 million gap, including the $40 million that are undefined. So what this is we're truly asking for input. What are the preferences from the audience, from the public? What are the preferences in terms of service versus fares? And within the category of fares, what are the preferences of the various different levels? Now, I'm presuming, and I'm sort of following up on Mr. Downey's comment, Ms. O'Keefe, could you just tell us for sure that option C has got language in there that does say that we could take that option if there were, or the option is intended for no service changes. From a legal point of view, does that allow us to do some service changes if that's what's part of this package? Your microphone isn't on.
The way these attachments have been structured is for the convenience of presentation. It doesn't dictate the way the public notice will be drafted, and the public notice draft that you have before you is intended to provide the widest range of options and not to limit the board in any way.
So we would be able to do that?
Correct.
Given the way it's worded?
Yes.
Thank
you. Given the way the resolution is worded and the way the public service notice will be, you're not limited to what is in attachment A. This is, again, intended to be a menu of options, not a limitation for the board.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure that we wouldn't have a legal constraint when we get to the far end and say, no, you can't use whatever is in that option C. One other question, and this may require a follow-up. On page 8 on Metro Access, we're actually talking about a policy change here, but it isn't entirely clear what it is we're talking about. Can I get an explanation as to what aligned service area with ADA definition and aligned free ride program with conditional eligibility means?
Yes, I'm sorry. Oh, Christian Kent will describe it.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning. The alignment of the Metro Access service area refers to the hours and days of operation of fixed route transit service being the same as where and when Metro Access operates, by locations, by days, and by hours. Some routes operate only on certain days, and the hours can change as well, and so the detail of all fixed route services that Metro offers is already in the paratransit database. When a paratransit customer calls to make a reservation, this change would eliminate travel options wherever fixed route service is not offered.
Can I stop you right there then mm-hmm. for a second? So what you're saying is, so long as there is a bus running, and we're really talking about the three-quarters mile away from wherever that line is or wherever that route is. So long as there's a bus running that's in the service area, as soon as that bus stops running or if there is no route in that area, then there is no paratransit service available.
That's
is that right?
Correct.
Now, we also have an option in here that talks about service beyond the three-quarters miles with a premium. Is that an alternative to this? You're giving us two different ways that we can look at that?
It is. That's correct. We wanted to distinguish the two because currently we do operate beyond the ADA corridor, and there are four zones beyond the corridor, each with an additional dollar above the base fare that is charged. So the second alternative would be to continue to operate service beyond the ADA required service area, but at a higher premium. But the reason why we're putting both of them side by side is to point out that in the long-term approach to really looking at leveraging the available services, and I say specialized transportation for the region, the demand for paratransit being what it is, what we're trying to do with our eligibility process is to take every person who approaches us for paratransit service and begin with the premise that it's really there just to complement available fixed route service. So every discussion is a comparison to, all right, we look at that individual's travel needs and say, if you were able to use fixed route service, what would your alternatives be? So when we operate service beyond the corridor, there's not a comparable for that purpose. So when we get into the second part of the discussion of conditional eligibility, which basically is a more detailed review of a customer's ability to use fixed route services even some of the time as opposed to all of the time, that activity is going to have more meaning if we restrict paratransit service to only those places where there is a fixed route comparable.
Okay, let me stop you for a second just so I understand. What we're doing now is we're going out to public hearing to ask the question, should we leave everything the way it is? Should we restrict service to within 3/4 miles of a route when a route is operating? Or should we charge a premium fare for service beyond that 3/4 mile? Those are the options that we have. And when we come back and get the input from the public, we can choose among those or any subsets of those.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. Now your second half, which we're leading into on conditional eligibility. What does it mean when you align the free ride program with conditional eligibility?
Well, the intent with Metro Access was to start with conditional eligibility in the first place. It was actually included in the program's original plan, but in practice we moved away from it nearly 10 years ago. But the ADA does provide for trip-by-trip eligibility for Metro Access. Presently, when customers apply for the service, they are determined eligible, in which case they can use Metro Access without limitation, or they're deemed ineligible, and there was no middle ground. At the same time, all customers who are eligible for Metro Access service can use the fixed route system without limitation, free of charge. And where we're going with this is to say that in going forward, when we give full paratransit eligibility, the assumption is that that means that the individual is not able to use fixed route service, in which case there's no need to give them free rides on the fixed route service if they're not able to use it. If they are conditionally eligible, that finding in the eligibility assessment process would affirm that there are conditions in which this individual could use fixed route service, and so for those individuals, we would allow those individuals to use fixed route service for free, and that is a policy shift that's being recommended here, and it would activate upon that person's next assessment for eligibility. So I mean, at the moment, right now, those who are using the service are fully eligible, and we would wait until their current period of eligibility expires, and when they come in to be reassessed, if they qualified for conditional eligibility, they could continue to ride for free, but if they were found ineligible or fully eligible, then they would not have the free ride benefit.
So you're saying if I'm not eligible at all, I don't get the free ride. That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But also, if I'm fully eligible, then I have to use it. I don't have the alternative of using the fixed route service. So we're discouraging them from using it. So the premise is you physically cannot use it, and therefore, logically, you should not get a free ride.
That's correct.
Now, the other part of what you said was very significant, and that is we are moving forward with conditional eligibility, which means you only get service for that portion of the ride that you cannot do on fixed route. And we're doing that for everybody in the program and everybody who's new. Is that right?
Well, let me just clarify exactly what we're doing, that we have already begun a process to vet this concept with our Accessibility Advisory Committee. That is the appropriate mechanism, and we're going to make a procedural change with our service. We have talked about what the ADA allows. We have another session with the committee coming up where we're going to take public input. But the general plan was to say that there would be, hopefully on July 1st, a new conditional eligibility option in place wherein an applicant for Metro Access, if they have certain conditions where they can use fixed route service and other situations where they cannot, that would be an optional outcome of the assessment, and that would be applied uniformly to every new and every recertifying Metro Access user.
So you said new and recertifying, but that's not part of this hearing. That's something that is happening anyways, what you're telling me.
That's correct. It did not require board action, and it was something that, you know, based on previous discussions from the APTA peer review, it's been recommended, and staff has been proceeding on that under the guidance of our advisory committee.
and that presumably would have some budget implications. Are those built into this budget already, or are those yet to come?
It represents about half of the $10 million savings that is shown in the presentation.
Just the conditional eligibility portion?
Yes, sir.
And so we're dealing with the other half of that?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kent. And I think the point out of all of that discussion is we're not making the policy change now. We are putting out for advertisement what we would need to do should we choose to make those changes. And I wanted to raise that point because we will be talking about a calendar, and I think to fully have this discussion about any changes that would go from what we are today to either a more restrictive or a more optional opportunities for our customers on that. Mr. Graham, who is first, and then Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, I'm very concerned about this proposal that is before us today. And I have a number of concerns about this. But first and foremost is the uproar that this is going to cause. And we know that we are in a terrifically challenging budget situation. There's no question about that. We know we're facing great economic challenges as well. But to put out a budget that involves service reductions in excess of $20 million more than what we need to put out is an invitation for a fist fight. And we're surely going to get it. We're surely going to get it. In terms of the District of Columbia, which I think is very hard hit by this, the elimination of the H1 bus service running from Ward 5 all the way to the State Department, affecting 90,000 rides a year, is just one of a number of hits that the District of Columbia is going to take in this proposal. The elimination of weekend late night hours in the subway and bus system, something that I have fought for since I first came on this board, and we did it incrementally. When I came on this board, this whole system shut down at midnight, like we were in Topeka. You know, and we moved it to 1 a.m., then we moved it to 2 a.m., and then we moved it to 3 a.m., all initially funded by the taxpayers in the District of Columbia. Now we're told we're going to eliminate that entirely. The extension of the Yellow Line to Fort Totten through Ward 1, I might add, involving the stations at Columbia Heights, U Street, Georgia Avenue. Another expansion which the District of Columbia paid for into stations which are now some of the busiest stations in this whole system, proving that if Metro WMATA is more relevant to the District of Columbia, more people will ride it. We're going to eliminate that, and on and on. Now, if this was absolutely necessary, you'd have to say, well, folks, this is absolutely what we have to do. But keeping in mind that we're putting out service reductions well at $20 million plus in excess of what we need makes this especially problematic for me. In addition to that, I'm concerned about how these fare increases are happening. 28% increase in bus fares. This authority did a survey in 2007, which as contrasted with 21% in rail. We did a survey in 2007 where we found that Metro Rail passengers had a median income of $102,000, were 75% white, and only 1 in 50 did not own an automobile. Contrast that with Metro bus passengers, where there was a median income of $69,000, where there was 50% minority, and one in five did not own an automobile, which means that it's a population much more transit dependent than that which rides the rail. In addition to all of that, we are not even describing two major options. Our resolution states in the final whereas that the general manager has recommended that the budget shortfall be addressed in part through, quote, passenger revenue increases and service changes. That was not the recommendation of the general manager. The general manager's original recommendation was to find most of the $40 million gap in using capital funds for capital purposes now covered in the operating budget. And somehow or another, he was kind of bludgeoned to drop all of that and to come up with this. But the fact of the matter is that we could be using capital funds for capital purposes now covered in the operating budget. With that option needs to be described here. Our riding public and our other stakeholders need to know that there are options, but that option is nowhere described. And oh, I know we're mortgaging the future. Oh, I know that the wheels are going to fall off the buses. Oh, I know, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Later on in this session, we are going to probably appoint an interim general manager from New Jersey who told us last week that New Jersey Transit used $350 million of their capital funds to close their budget gap. So, you know, my timid, you know, beaten down efforts to take a few million out of a capital budget, which is $800 million annually, you know, in order to avoid and reduce and maybe take some of the edge off some of these service reductions and fare increases, is something that at least should be described. If we're going to put out a document for public discussion, let's make sure that it has all the options. And using capital dollars to fund capital purposes now covered in the operating budget is one such option. And another option is, of course, the subsidies. We all know, I'm an appropriator on this panel, others are as well. You know, I have the ability as chairman of the Committee on Public Works and Transportation to actually appropriate the subsidy for Metro WMATA. And I know it's going to be tough, but I think we need to indicate to our riding public very clearly as part of all of what we're putting together here, and not being restrained by technicalities of what must be presented, but give them a full picture and say the District of Columbia, each of the suburban jurisdictions, the county governments, can send more money to Metro WMATA and can take all of this and can reduce all of these impacts. That's not discussed either. And I think it's not discussed because we don't formally have to present these options to the public. And maybe it's not discussed for other reasons. But I think a proposal that I am willing to support has to present these issues in detail, has to present these issues. And we have to wrestle with the issue of all these bus service reductions. Look at, I'm not here to speak for Prince George's County, but you're in the soup with us in D.C. It's D.C. and Prince George's County that are being clobbered by these proposed service reductions. And let me conclude on this note. We can sit here and say, now, please, everyone remember, this is just for discussion. Please keep in mind that no decisions have been made. I've been through this process 12 times now. In the 12 years I've been a member of this board, I've heard that said over and over and over again, and I've also heard what the reaction is. I've heard what the consequences are from the riding public, because that very useful piece of information is almost immediately completely ignored, and all of this is seen as something coming from this authority, board, general manager, whatever. And for me to be associated with this, you know, I have to have a greater sense of comfort about what we're doing and how we're describing what the true options are that are available to us. So I hope, Madam Chair, that we can, before we put this out this morning, describe ways in which we can reduce the service reductions to a level which is more realistically connected to what we need to do, not $20 million in excess of what we need to do, and also to take a serious look about the impact on those who are most vulnerable, least able to afford the fare increases, and then make sure that we have presented a full picture. And that's what I'm asking this board to work on today, so that we can put that type of proposal out to the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a couple of questions that I guess follow pretty much on the discussion we just had. I want to first ask Ms. Kissel to confirm something that Mr. Benjamin indicated earlier. What is before us as a proposal for the docket for hearing to be advertised encompasses all the various proposals of options and variations, fair and service-wise, that we have had presented to us and have passed on to you? In other words, everything the Writers' Council said last night is in here as a possibility.
Well, I don't know if I wasn't at the Writers' Council meeting last night.
No, but you have the one piece of paper.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. I can look at it right now.
Okay, well, I want to be certain that everything that's there is included in this. I want to be certain that things we passed over the past couple of months, such as the proposals from MetroWriters.org and Greater Greater Washington, which were very specific and varied and were presented a good month ago, and that we handed over. The proposals that were probably a month before that that came from ATU Local 689 that we also passed over to you, that all of those things are included in ways that mean that they could be considered by the board before passing a final budget.
All of the, excuse me. I'm looking at the last night Writers Advisory Council and the peak of the peak surcharge that they recommended on Metro Bus is not in our proposal. Because we didn't get it soon enough. And the other issue is on parking, we had 50 cents, and actually this says increase the price hourly parking, so I don't have that proposal.
Okay, Madam Chairman, I would ask that before we take final action on this, which presumably is in board and not necessarily the committee, we've got to take this twice, right, that we have whatever is necessary prepared that will ensure that we can advertise any of that that was proposed, that essentially our advertisement will be comprehensive and include those proposals that came from the Writers' Council. On the other matters, which obviously you've had for some time, can you affirm that all those are included in this?
Yeah, and I will say our largest union had sent us a letter with a very complete list of recommended changes, which are in the general manager's proposed budget. Some of those have not been put in the recommended proposal here because of the fact that we made a determination that they could not be implemented. And I don't have that list here.
Okay, well, we will need to have that. If there's a reason we're not, and again, I want to be careful about the language when you say it's proposed. You've proposed a specific budget.
That's correct.
The hearing docket is beyond that.
I'm speaking about the hearing docket when I'm speaking about what's in the hearing docket. Some of those items that are in the ATU letter are not specifically laid out in the proposed docket that you are considering today.
Okay, it is my position that the only reason to exclude something is because it is completely infeasible.
Well,
it just couldn't be done.
And I decrease the age children can ride Metrorail for free. We just did not include that in the presentation that you have before you. I can go down the list.
Well, I don't want you to go down the list now,
okay.
But what I want to know is that the only things that you haven't included are things that are, as opposed to not being a good idea, are simply some things that you can't do. Because we're not making the decision today what's a good idea. We're simply starting a process by which we'll put this whole thing together. So I want to know when somebody asks or says to me, why didn't the board include this in one of the things that could be considered, that there's a pretty straightforward, simple answer for that.
If the board is asking that we should be including every option that was in the recommendations from the ATU that are feasible and that are legal, we can certainly include that in the docket.
Well, I can't speak for the board. I can say that this board member believes that's what the board should do.
Okay.
And that conversation can, continue afterwards. But let me just say, my goal is to have us put on the table as much as possible. Our writers have said that in very different ways through the council formally and individually who have testified before us, who have written to us, have said we should put things on the table so that there's a real choice, so that the hearing isn't just you know, it's not a done deal. The budget isn't done, and the hearing's just a charade then. They've wanted us to put something that allows people to say, no, I think you should take from column B and not column C. And I support that. I think that is the proper way for us to do this, especially in this circumstance. If we were making fairly minor adjustments to a budget, if there were a clear path to a balanced budget that did not involve any kind of, you know, excess pain, if we did not have to put people into an uproar, that would be fine. I'm not real anxious to have an uproar when we don't need one. But we are actually in a situation that real pain is involved somewhere. And who's going to take it and in what proportions is what we're deciding. And before we decide that, we should put everything on the table, understanding that will get people upset about a lot of things. They should be upset, and they need to say so, because in part, we don't get to decide the whole thing, as actually Mr. Graham's comments point out, because there are people not in this room who can decide, and who in fact will decide, how much pain is going to be suffered. But that won't happen. They won't consciously decide that unless they're part of the conversation too. And there's no other way that I can see to make this happen. So let me say, I think every proposal we've gotten should be part of the docket. I also think that the other proposals that aren't discussed here, but I think are implicit, that Mr. Graham's referring to, and the option, because it is an option to take money from capital. That is definitely an option. The reason it's not appearing here explicitly is because it's the thing we don't actually have to go to hearing on. To take more money for riders, we do. To take away their service, we do. To get anything from other jurisdictions, we have to tell them we want it. The one thing we can actually do discretionarily at any time is take money out of the capital fund. Nonetheless, I'm sensitive to the point that I think Mr. Graham was also making, that if it's on the table, it should be on the table, and perhaps we should be saying something about that. That speaks more to what has to go out between now and the hearing that can be produced by staff, as opposed to what legally needs to be advertised, because it doesn't require to be advertised. But it's fair to put that on the table, and I think it should be on the table, and people should think about the consequences of different levels of applying that solution. The budget that actually is proposed by the manager, which is summed up on slide 7 that we have, has, of course, that big line item that says additional contribution for $40 million. And I was having trouble finding in the appendix, Ms. Kissel, where would I see where it shows the jurisdictional subsidy needed to fill that hole?
That is not in the presentation.
It's not?
No.
Well, can we get it?
Yes, we can do that.
This is part of your budget. Your proposed budget has $40 million in additional contribution. Mm-hmm. That has a definite implication through the formula that we have, and I think everybody here needs to know, you know, for those of us who represent the jurisdictions that pay for this, mm-hmm. we need to know how much that means you would be suggesting we take from each of those jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, there are options beyond that, which I think should be on the table, which is how do you eliminate the service cuts that are in here, perhaps alleviate, you know, some of the fare increase that Mr. Graham was speaking to, but we would need to know, and again, there's a table that can easily be generated that shows that. Then we would each of us know, and then we can communicate with our jurisdictions, which frankly, if we're sending out something to hearing in these jurisdictions that ask people to come comment, and there's a $40 million figure which those jurisdictions are being asked to pay for, they ought to be told that.
Well, I have a question, and let me be clear so I understand the direction.
It's not direction. I'm one board member speaking, so it's not direction until the whole body says.
Well, clear of your direction.
Request at this point, but go ahead.
Clear of your request, I apologize. You want the general manager to take the $40 million and provide a document that shows what the increased subsidy would be by jurisdiction to fill that gap. Is that a correct?
I think that's statement? A description, which is a way of saying I'm asking you to provide the table that is implicit in the, that in fact you are asking for, that is in the budget you have proposed. So people will know the implication. The people on my board back across the river ought to know what it is you are proposing comes out of their budget to your budget, because they have to figure that in making their budget.
We can provide that.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I want to offer my support for the use of capital funds for preventive maintenance as well as an option and on the table, and I'm happy that Mr. Graham talked about it, and Mr. Zimmerman seems to support at least having it in the mix. for full disclosure of what we're considering on the total package here. But, you know, I know there's concerns about that, and I'm a maintenance guy personally in my history, and it is a slippery slope, as Mr. Downey referred to the last time we talked about it. But I think to some degree we could limit that exposure by capping. So, you know, we may want to consider capping that number at some point in the future, but certainly I think it should be included in the options that we're looking at. I'd like to also, in looking at the alternate fare alternatives that were listed on page 11, I think we really should seriously consider, again, just for purposes of advertising, raising all parking fees to $1 rather than the 50% that was mentioned in the alternatives. I think that should be in the mix. I think to some degree of station-specific capital improvement fare surcharges should be considered. We had staff look at some options of a 5-cent fare surcharge entry and exit at up to 2 stations in each jurisdiction for purposes of funding station-specific capital improvements. And we did seem to come up with a number of about $960,000 a year that could be raised at Union Station, for instance. So I think those kind of options should be explored in the future, and maybe you do have them somewhere there, but I think that's something to consider. It was also mentioned about on weekends the possibility of fares, adjusting fares after 12:01 a.m., in other words, nighttime hours, morning hours, I guess you'd call it, to closing. I would say we'd want to consider maybe a flat fare in some of those areas of maybe up to $4 for that service. And certainly to promote the use of the system and greater intermodality and reduce the cost for the use of both of our systems, maybe increase the rail-to-bus transfer discount up to 75 cents. So some of those things are little nits and nats, but I think to lay them on the table, at least put them out as options, is something we probably should consider.
Madam Chair, point of order.
Yes, Mr.
I will yield my seat so that Mr. Giancola may make that as a motion.
Are we in the point of making motions now, Madam Chair?
Yes.
I think we were trying to go through any questions and clarities of what this presentation is, and then we can come back.
Okay.
Because I think, and let me tell you why, Mr. Graham, just so that we can make sure that we are all clear as to what is here and massage it to the point that when we are all asked to now vote, we have considered all of the options and brought them onto the table, if that is so the case with the committee now. So right now, I'd like to leave it as a question because, no, he's not. I'd like to leave it on the table and then we can bring on motions because we have a full board here participating and I think that's very important. Okay. Okay.
The committee members. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I find myself in partial agreement with Mr. Graham on some of his presentation here today. I think I have a fundamental problem with the volume of the service cuts that have been presented. And I think he's right in that they largely affect the District of Columbia and Prince George's County. They affect everybody, that's true, all the jurisdictions. But the bulk of it, I have looked at tremendous service cuts in Prince George's County. But I also give the riding public a lot more credit. I think in terms of understanding the menu, it is our job to ensure that they understand the menu, how we present it, and hopefully the press will help us in this instance, how we present the menu. I think we have to hear from our riding public. I can remember just 2 months ago at a region-wide hearing right here in this room, the dominant theme was no service cuts. That was the dominant theme. We heard other positions as well, but that was the dominant theme. I remember the hearing in Prince George's County when we had items on the table, and again they said they would rather have a fare increase than have service cuts. I think Mr. Graham is correct in that when we put these service cuts out, the general public, I mean, they were incensed last time I remember in Prince George's County. And they may be incensed this time because they're fearful of losing the very route and the very means of getting to their places of employment. And I can understand that. I would be fearful as well. However, we need to hear from them. I'm willing to sit there and take the heat and hear from them, provided that we understand it. I doubt that it will ever come to fruition that all those service cuts will actually take effect. I don't think this board will let that happen. We will look at some combination after we hear from everyone. We will look at some combination of the above, of all the items in this menu, to come out with something that is as fair as possible under the circumstances and trying to address the problem. And I think that is why I'm willing to go forward with the menu, knowing that we will take some heat regarding the proposed service cuts, but hopefully explaining to the public, and hopefully they understand that the reason we put it out there is so that we can hear from them and what these service cuts mean. I'm vehemently opposed to some of them. You know, some of them can be tweaked, but you know, there are many of them that we are that riders, our riding public, are vehemently opposed to. And I think I'm willing to take the heat and listen to everything that everyone has to say on all of the above. And if it means being there however many hours, I will be there however many hours. But I'd rather hear from them and then come back and make the decision. And as has been said time and time again, this is, in fact, a menu. It is not a decision. It is a way to put everything out on the table so that we can hear and glean important feedback from our riding public. And that's what I would really like to do.
Thank you. Okay. Are there any other questions? Mr. Lehman first, and then Mr. Zimmer.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I just want to make sure that a couple of things. One, that everything that we are proposing within this menu can technically be done, that there are no technology restrictions within any of the proposals that are here that we cannot accommodate within, you know, smart trip software, some of the variations that have been asked here. We need to make sure, one, if it's on the table, it is something that we can, the technology that we have today will provide. So that's one screen. The second is to make sure that it legally can be done, that it does not violate any Title VI issues, any ADA issues, any of those issues as we're going forth. And third item is that we are putting together a tremendous document that can be subject to misinterpretation, miscommunication. We have an enormous communication challenge when we have a very mild fare increase with very few options. We now have an enormous communication challenge with all of these variations, and I'm not sure what we have done to prepare for this differently in terms of hours of FTEs, people assigned, communication process, processes to make sure that information is accurate, being gleaned two or three times before it goes out. I'm just hoping that as we go through this, I'm concerned about the system in which this is be presented in, and also how we get the information back and we get a real picture on what our riders and our general public is in fact expressing. So those are just some items that undergird my concerns as we put this forth. And I think being consistent with what's been said by many, this is an opportunity for us to have a discussion with the family. Nothing more than that. We're inviting the family to the table and said that we have a budget, family, and we have challenges, and we have a menu of options, and we want to hear from everybody in the household on how we're going to go forward. Some of the things are here, I'm sure that there's some of our children that don't like, and there are many of the adults here don't like. And we will have a good listening session, an opportunity to hear, and then we'll make some decisions at the end of that. But no decisions have been made yet. And I think I want to reinforce that. There have been no decisions made yet on the family's budget. That will occur after we hear from all the members of the family. And that's where I'm going to conclude my remarks.
Just a quick clarification. I'm looking at the resolution the Writers Council approved last night, and in the third bullet on the second page, the last statement refers to a differential between Smart Trip and cash fares for Metrobus, which they proposed to be advertised up to 25 cents. And I may be misreading, but it looks like the docket as prepared has a differential of only 10 cents for Metrobus to be advertised. Am I mistaken about that?
That's correct.
It's only 10 cents.
That's on the docket, 10 cents.
Right. So, again, Madam Chairman, when we get to actual motions, I would propose that we make sure our docket conforms to the recommendation here, which, again, is not to say anyone is endorsing such an idea, but that the idea that's put forward by the Writers' Council should be part of what we are considering when we go to approve a budget. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Graham.
We're still in clarification. Okay. As a clarification, you know, the jurisdictions pay subsidies according to certain services that are rendered. We have some idea of the impact on the subsidies of the core proposal, but do we have the details on the impact of the jurisdictional subsidies if this entire proposal was was ultimately implemented and enacted?
No, you do not have that before you today. That is something that we will have actually by the end of this week, by tomorrow. So we will have a subsidy impact statement by service reduction and by jurisdiction.
The other, well, I think that's very important information for those of us who have to deal with budgets. I know that in the budget book, judging from a substantial aspect of these various changes, the District of Columbia's payment would go up $1.2 million. Prince George's County would go up in excess of $4 million in additional subsidies, and so on and so forth. The second, but these are not the final numbers relating to this complete proposal.
No, and can I make a clarification?
Sure.
Just a clarification on that point. We actually took the overall recommended proposed service cuts in the general manager's budget and allocated them based upon a broad formula. So they did not imply a specific route that would be included. So that was just a broad brush of what the subsidy impact would be, not the most specific, because that would have to come as a result of the decisions that were made on the service cuts.
I mean, this is an important point so everyone understands it. As you reduce services, that ought to have a reduction, an impact of reducing the subsidy that a specific jurisdiction that was impacted pays. Mm-hmm. And so that's important. The second thing, I requested this the last time. We still don't have it. I think this second analysis is very important, which is a services reduction impact by jurisdiction. In other words, who are the people that are going to be most hard hit by this, and where do they live? Is a very important piece of information on which we have nothing at the moment. We just have conjecture in terms of what we think. We can see we know the bus impacts are in Prince George's County and the District of Columbia. We know that, no question about it. But, Mr. General Manager, I've asked for this information previously. Why is it that we don't have it before us today when we really need to evaluate this proposal?
We have it by line, but we do not have it collectively. The reason is the same issue that Ms. Linton brought up. We have people who are working every night and weekends on this information, and there's only so much they can get into a specified period of time. They are going to work on that document and have committed to me. They will get it to you and provide it to the board. The answer is we have had major reductions in staff, and we do not have the staffing levels to push out all the requests that have come in from board members concerning the budget.
Well, when do you think we will have the subsidy impact analysis and the service impact analysis?
Yeah, we're working on it currently now, and I think we should have something by early next week. So it's being worked on as we speak, but it'll be completed by early next week.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Still, Ms. Yule, there's a question.
Yes, just for clarification, and I realize staff still has other information that they're going to be providing us, but the resolution, the draft resolution that was emailed to board members that I downloaded yesterday with the proposed resolution and then attachments, and then we come in this morning, we have the same resolution with attachments, but these attachments that we have this morning are different from what we downloaded. So what documents, what set of documents are we to work with?
Yeah, the documents that you have in front of you today that were distributed are the most up-to-date ones. We had minor technical changes into the night, and that's the ones that are the ones that you should be looking at.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Having heard discussion, I would think that we are prepared to make amendments to items on the docket as have been mentioned. And I think we need to begin with the attachments that you had raised questions on. For example, the first part that I think we should include, and I would ask for a motion to amend the docket to include the items, is on the question of the RAC so that we can ensure the writer's advisory piece, as indicated from the item that was presented from the RAC in the resolution, to ensure that the numbers are consistent with that for the purpose of advertising. Is that a consensus with everyone?
May I suggest, Madam Chair, that you need a main motion?
Okay. Let's have a motion to put the entire docket on the table. Thank you. Is there a second?
Madam Chair, point of order.
Yes.
So could you indicate who has a vote at this?
Okay. The board consists of the committee, I'm sorry, consists of Ms. Hewlett, Mr. Benjamin, Mr. Graham, and Mr. Downey. Thank you. That's right, you don't. Mr. McKay is not here. And Mr. Downey is a member of this committee. He's moved the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Benjamin has seconded the motion. Now, the motion on the table is to adopt the docket as presented in the attached, in the resolution with the attachments. Are there any amendments?
Well, we have amendments.
Okay. Go right ahead. Let me start with you, Mr. Graham.
Well, we have a number of amendments.
Let's.
So, I would, with the permission of the chair, I would yield to, if I can, I don't know if I can do this in the committee setting. I can't. So I will move everything that Board Member Giancola suggested.
Mr. Graham has moved, and I'm going to. I don't want to be an interpreter and ask.
I can repeat it if you want.
Well, here I have it. Here
okay,
I have it.
He
here
has I his have it. He has his talking.
I have it. Let's see. We would increase the all parking fees by $1. Do you want to do this individually, or do you want to do this?
I think if you read them all, and then if there are any changes, then we would have to put it on the table in a different.
We would increase parking fees by up to $1 in the proposal. We would institute free bus-to-rail and rail-to-bus transfers on weekends. We would allow the implementation put up for discussion a 5-cent fare surcharge entry and exit at up to 2 stations in each jurisdiction, Virginia, Maryland, and D.C., for the purpose of funding station-specific capital improvements at those stations at which a surcharge is levied. Surcharges in addition to all other non-pass fare charges. We would charge an increased flat fare on weekends after 12:01 a.m. to closing. And we can discuss what that amount ought to be. We would increase the rail bus. The rail to bus transfer discount to up to 75 cents. Is that, do I, have I captured your proposals, Mr. Giannacola? And I would, you know, let me, so I move. I so move.
Is there a second? And then I have a question to Ms. Kessler. Is there a second to the items that have been placed on? Mr. Downey, second.
If I may, before you ask a question, let me just see if Mr. Giancola, since I'm moving his motion, if he has anything he'd like to say in support of the motion before we proceed.
Are you only asking him? I'm trying to stay within our parliamentary procedures. I don't think he can speak to the motion that.
Well, I just wanted to give him the courtesy of a comment if he's...
Can we come back to that?
Yes, we can come back to that.
And the only question I have is that in each of the items that... Thank you. Is this what's coming around?
This is what's on.
Oh, that's nice. In the items that have been included, these are all items that need to be advertised in order to reflect the fare adjustments or revenue change.
Yes, we understand.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Okay, it's been moved and second that we include the items as listed on a sheet you have now in front of you called Attachment C Addendum. May I have a vote as to whether or not, question, yes, discussion? Mr. Benjamin.
We're talking only now about this Attachment C Addendum for a vote.
That's right.
I intend to vote yes on this under the philosophy that we have adopted, because some of the items in here are anathema to me. I would never want to approve them. But under the philosophy that we've adopted, that we want to go before the public to have the widest possible range and hear their comments, and this does not in any way indicate an endorsement by this board, but rather is trying to say to the public, here are some options that are available to you.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, Mr. Downey.
I would just endorse the same point. I think the more broadly we can put ideas forward and churn them around, the better we are. And I think this adds to the mix and should be included in the hearing notice.
Okay. There is now a vote on the amendment. All those in favor of the amendment as stated?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, so that amendment has expanded the docket. Are there any other amendments?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Graham.
I move that we make the increase in the bus rail fares, the same percentage increase as in the rail fare increase. So that, and I think one of our budget people can easily tell us what that percentage would be, so that we're not increasing rail fares by so much less than we're doing with the bus fare increases. The what's on the table right now, just so everyone knows, is that the bus fares are being increased by 28%. The rail fares are being increased by 21%. And so I'd like the percentage increase to be the same for both.
Is there a second?
Would that be achieved by lowering the rail fare proposal or by raising?
It would be achieved, I assume, by
lowering the bus or raising the rail.
It would be achieved by doing that.
Raising the rail?
I think I have a question here.
Yeah. Mr. Zimmerman.
I just want to understand that point, because I guess I can't figure out how you even calculate something like that. If I want to know the impact on the cost of a trip, I have to know the overall cost of the trip. And on the rail side, because the fare is a complex formula, when we're changing all these things, I'd have to bring all that into account to know whether the percentage increases more or less. So if we're talking about a peak time trip with, say I take your trip, Madam Chairman, and I get on at Vienna, how much do I pay to come here, and how much would I under the proposal? And with the various charges here, it's not clear to me that that would be a smaller percentage for you than it would cost you to take the bus under the proposal that's otherwise before us.
I'm not sure I even calculate that the rail service is only proposed to go up possibly 21%. You know, that I don't actually know how you get that, because the cost of the rail trip is more complex than that, and probably is going up more than 21% if you took the maximum that is advertised here.
Mr. Zimmerman, I buy quality, not cost, so I can't tell you the cost of it. But I'm sure the if there's some clarity that's needed, we need to talk to our staff.
But let me just say that these percentages have been provided to us from management, and so you have told us that the bus fares are increasing by 28% and rail by 21%. So it would seem to me that if there's any explanation, you should start with explaining how you came to those percentages.
If I may, Madam Chairman, the dollar amount of the increase, or the cost of the increases, if I understand it, are that basically we're looking for some commonality. You have a lower number with the bus fares. So even though the amounts might be the same, it changes the percentage. You have a rail fares where you have higher amounts, and that was the logic. If we were to reduce it to the same percentage, I'm not so sure we could come out with an even number, because we usually round that over to the nearest 5 cents versus having like $1.55 fare, I mean, 155 versus 153. Again, these are just recommendations that we're going out to the public with, and we have the opportunity to pick and choose any of these, or the board will, as we bring this back to you.
So, Mr. Graham, you're trying to bring a level of equity, are you thinking, into the bus and rail numbers that the customer actually pays? And considering that we have started out with a bus fare lower, then you simply are trying to bring it to that. So does it need to be a percentage, or can it be a much more simplistic view? As long as the staff can accomplish that in presenting the numbers.
Well, thank you. I'm trying to just more equally and equitably distribute the pain of all of this in terms of the percentage of the increases. And I recognize that it's a complex formula that leads us to all of this, but I was using the percentages that staff has provided. And I haven't calculated my own 28% here, but if we're increasing bus fares by 28% and rail fares by 21%, that would not seem to me to be an equitable situation in terms of our bus and rail riders.
Well, and you're right. If you look at the dollar amount, we're increasing rail fares by 35 cents, and we're increasing bus fares by 35 cents. And I think that's the point that Chairperson Hudgens was making. If you want to keep the dollar amount the same, that's one decision. Or if you want to keep the percentages the same.
Well, it's the percentage impact that concerns me.
Okay.
So we will leave it as percentages, you stated.
Snapper, is the percentage set at 28%? Is that the number you're saying? Because the numbers vary here from 28% to 233%. So which one is it that we're doing?
Well, I don't know.
Well,
I mean, I'm just going on the percentages that have been provided.
Well, the numbers in the docket go from 28 to 233.
For what? For rail?
For bus.
For bus.
Yeah.
But there's an overall average, is there not?
No, there's one for the base. There's one for
No, but I mean, how did the staff reach the 28% then?
Let me be clear. The average bus boarding charge, the bus is $1.25. The proposed for this proposal is to make it to $1.60. That is a 35-cent increase. On the rail, the average current fare is $1.65, a minimum fare. The proposed is $2. That is a difference of 35 cents. That is the basis for the percent changes.
I think it doesn't relate to the issue of the core fare. The core fare for rail goes up 21%. The core fare for bus goes up 28%. And then the bus passes go up 36%.
But Mr. Graham, I'm just trying to make sure that what you're putting on the table is something that is relative to what you're really attempting to accomplish. We already have a fare on bus that is lower in concept than the rail. And while it may be percentage-wise different, that's the fare. Is there, what we need to advertise is for the customer to realize how much more in actual fare cost they must have as an addition for the discussion in this advertisement, rather than percentages. And I think that we've done that, unless you wish to ask the staff to make it 35 cents plus whatever the delta was from the base. That's what it sounds to me. It's where we start as to where we end up on this. We don't need to spend.
Okay, I think that might be. I think that might be a good deal more complicated than I initially thought.
Okay, thank
you. I have another amendment. I would like to propose that the bus reduction service reductions of $18.3 million and the rail reductions of $15.4 million be eliminated in favor of the use of capital funds to fund capital purposes within the operating budget, so that that would come to a total of $33.7 million, which we would take from our, what is it, Ms. Kissel, is it an $800 million capital budget annually? Are we up to $800 million yet?
The proposed for next year is $711 million okay. At this point.
So I propose to take this $33.7 million from our $711 million capital budget and use those $37 million to fund preventative maintenance. And this issue has gotten so contorted, so screwed up, you know, that...
Do you have
that,
a motion, Mr. Green?
That's my motion.
Okay.
I mean, these are capital purposes within, currently funded with operating dollars. And that's really the way this must be seen. Capital purposes currently funded by operating dollars, and I'm proposing to use capital dollars to fund them and thereby eliminate all of the bus reductions and all of the rail reductions.
Mr. Graham, is your motion pertinent to the advertisement of the docket?
Yes.
He wants to delete all the service changes.
Yeah. I'm proposing to delete all of the service changes in favor of using $33.7 million from our $711 million capital budget, by the way, which we typically do not spend in its entirety, and we can get into those numbers if you want to once again with our CFO, and thereby take out all of the service reductions and leave us with a fare increase proposal.
Mr. Graham has put a motion on the table of using capital money to replace the cuts. Is there a second to his motion? Is there a second? Hearing no second, the motion dies. Is there another amendment to the docket?
Yes, I have a couple of amendments. The first one is a clarification in the, just so we make sure we're consistent, in the notice of public hearing, there's an item that says increase Metro access fare to twice the comparable fixed route fare. In the attachment C and all the other attachments, it says increase the Metro access fare to twice the proposed bus fare. Which of the two is it that we're actually being asked to vote upon?
Okay, I'm sorry.
On attachment C, it's line item 44. That you're referencing?
Okay, so what is line item 31 supposed to be?
Yeah, they're both included in there. We can separate them. It's two options, actually, if you look at it.
Would item 33 ever be larger than 44?
You can't imagine. Item 31.
I'm sorry, 30. Would item 44 ever be larger than item 31? I can't imagine how it would.
Yeah, it could.
I'm sorry, the other way around.
Right.
Would item 31 ever be larger than 44?
No.
No. So why don't we just drop 31 from the package?
Okay.
Because all it does is confuse people.
Item.
The proposal is to increase Metro Access fare to twice the fixed route fare. We're looking at the largest.
And then 44 give her the
variance. 44 really belongs where item 31 is, and 31 should be dropped.
Okay.
Because our proposal is that we can always, twice is where we are now, so that's always true. And it's always less than 44. I'm not getting a nod that says you understand that.
No, we understand it. We're just trying to figure out if it doesn't, 44 doesn't pass, then we have a problem with 31. What?
No, 44, we can always make 31 at any point that we want to.
Oh, I understand now. Okay.
We can make them, we can pull any one we want as a combination.
Yes. Great.
Okay.
Okay, so if we can drop 31 and use 44 instead. Next one is on behalf of Mr. Zimmerman. I believe Mr. Zimmerman wanted to propose that all technologically possible items from the proposals we have received already from the Writers Council, from Local 689, and from, was it one or more blogs?
The ones we've already passed.
The ones that you've already looked at on the blogs be included in this package. Technologically and legally feasible.
Is there a second?
What is
the motion? The motion, and let me paraphrase it. I think what Mr. Zimmerman was asking, that Riders Advisory, ATU, and any of those groups that have proposed items, metro.org, that the information that is included be certain that it is technical, all included, that is technically and legally possible to do.
Perhaps I could clarify something.
What does that mean?
Can you clarify this?
That Mr. Zimmerman can speak. Go ahead.
I just wanted to clarify that what I'm referring to are proposals not just simply that are out there that we saw somewhere. They're all specific proposals that were brought to our table and passed on to staff already with committee direction to please look at. So it's a specific finite group of proposals. And those are the ones I'm asking that we make sure we encompass those proposals in our hearing docket.
And so I'm moving that on. Okay. Let's move and second on his behalf.
Question on that?
Yes.
Would they be presented in the docket by changing what is here or simply added as attachments that have been proposed by others?
I think they would be added into, they would be amended into the docket so that they could, that we could be certain to have those. For example, the one that's here and anything else.
It might be appropriate to make that item attachment X as opposed to trying to redo this.
And that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay, a good clarification. So let me just understand, taking those comments from the stakeholders and actually making that a separate attachment. Okay. Thank you.
All right. If that's the case, then we need to be careful that our main motion includes that as well as attachment C.
Right.
Okay. And then continuing, there was a request.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, we didn't vote yet.
I thought you were going to add on the chair. Okay.
Well, why don't we do it three separate ones?
So okay. Ms. Hewlett seconded your motion, so Mr. Benjamin's motion that will bring in all of those items that would become the new attachment. All those in favor?
Madam Chair, I don't understand this motion. I've got to have someone explain to me just very specifically what this says and what its impact is.
Mr. Graham, in the discussion that was heard earlier, Mr. Zimmerman brought forward the fact that we had received from Metro.org, the RAC, the ATU, an array of suggestions to be included. We have included in some places some of that information. We've asked to make certain that all information that is technically and legally possible from those organizations now be included as a separate attachment so that it would go out to the docket and make sure that they were included in our advertisement.
So that we are, in effect, then, if we pass this motion, we're going to include in the formal proposal everything that anybody has suggested of any kind in Appendix X. I mean, without examining what the specifics are?
Not exactly.
That is not necessarily the case. Many of them we have examined, or we have, we've made them, no, they would, I think Ms. Kissel explained that
she had excluded things that were completely not feasible, and we wanted to make certain that she had gone back and reviewed those documents to see if they were feasible or if they needed advertisement. We could put them in the docket so that we could discuss them. Ms. Kissel, is that the clarity that we...
That's exactly right. You can find a very comprehensive list in the proposed budget, but what we presented here was a subset of that. But what I'm hearing from the board is that we need to go back to that list and use the parameters which you've just described, technically feasible and legally able to implement, and we will do that. Yes.
Well, I'm not ready to support this since it's a pig and a poke. I don't know what it is. And if I had the specifics before me, it might be fine, but I don't know what I'm voting on, so I'm going to vote no on this.
Can I make a suggestion? We've actually already have this and probably can produce it in about 15 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
Can we put this off for the board meeting?
Well, we can. Let's see. Maybe by the time we get through the next amendments, they may be finished. and now there is a vote on that amendment. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Okay. That does not include it.
Please record me as voting no.
Yes, we will. Mr. Graham is recorded as voting no. The amendment does not pass. I'm sorry, pass. No. Who did we include? Yes, that's right. We're not a veto in the committee. Yes, okay. Next, Mr. Graham. Mr. Benjamin.
I just want to make sure the discussion that we had with staff about line 31 and line 44, mm-hmm. that's incorporated without a special motion. Is that right?
Right. That was okay. A consensus of okay. a correction.
Two more on behalf of both Mr. Zimmerman and Mr. Graham, or one more combining these two. Both of them talked about $40 million that were undefined, and Mr. Zimmerman suggested that we define within this what the subsidy contributions would have to be for the various jurisdictions and have that included as one of the alternatives. Another alternative that Mr. Graham proposed was that we include the use of capital funds as an alternative, I believe. And again, I'm not supporting either one. I don't think they're necessarily the way that we can reasonably go, but there's certainly alternatives that should be there for the $40 million. And there are additional alternatives that have been discussed, such as use of federal funds, et cetera. I am moving on behalf of both of those, and Mr. Graham can disagree since he's a member of this committee, that those both be included in the docket. So it's the subsidies by jurisdiction, if the jurisdictions were to increase their subsidies, and the use of capital funds for preventive maintenance instead of any of the other actions that might allow us to have the $40 million. I think that covers both of those individuals' proposals.
Do we have a second? There's a question, yes.
Just clarification. If I recall when Mr. Graham spoke, he mentioned to use preventative maintenance to fill the bus and rail cuts. You just said the $40 million.
Well, we would let Mr. Graham make that correction.
Okay.
Since he
actually said both and he lost on one,
okay.
So this is the other of the two.
Okay.
Mr. Graham, are you seconding?
It's not using, please don't say it's using preventative maintenance. Please don't say that because I've seen this conversation get twisted and turned every which weird way. It's using capital dollars to fund capital purposes that are now being paid for by in the operating budget. And I think if we were to use $34 million of our $711 million capital budget, we would be proposing no service reductions in either rail or bus. And I much prefer that as an approach to what we have. And that was, Mr. Cato, that was going to be your original proposal. Do you remember?
I have lots of memories of this budget process, Mr. Graham.
Mr. Graham, are you asking me to withdraw what I was proposed?
No,
you would like?
I just
okay.
like my
let me clarify again that my statement, at the risk of having you give your speech again, My statement was, I think, very accurate, and I want my statement to be on the record, which is the use of capital funds for preventive maintenance. What that does is it allows it essentially operating dollars to be used in the capital budget. But that is the technical way of talking about this, use of capital funds for preventive maintenance. And that's the way I want this worded, because that's what happens.
Is there a second to the motion as worded by Mr.
Second motion.
Mr. Downey, second. Discussion, Mr. Downey.
With respect to the jurisdictional subsidies that would be presented, will they be limited to closing the $40 million, or would we show levels above that depending on other choices like service cuts?
I believe that Mr. Zimmerman's suggestion was for the $40 million. Okay.
I really didn't want to belabor this, especially since I'd like to get to the board where I have a vote. But in fact, what Mr. Benjamin's proposed is not what I said, although it's not inconsistent with it, and I certainly wouldn't object to it. But I wasn't actually asking that you do something to the docket. I was pointing out that the general manager's budget is not responsible in telling people what it assumes in order to balance. And to me, it's kind of incredible that we have $40 million that is described in traditional contribution, but nobody's being told what they would be expected to pay. That's something the general manager needs to do and put out, and needs to do it today. Should have done it before. That's entirely independent of what's advertised, because, in fact, we don't need that on the hearing docket. I personally think all of that, in fact, should be a proposal to be considered. I don't object to the notion that the jurisdiction should be asked to pay an additional $40 million to make that budget balance. It doesn't follow the guidance that was given, but it's not a bad way to go. In fact, I would go beyond that. I would seek actually to request an amount that would be necessary not only to cover that $40 million, but the additional $33.7 million that Mr. Graham has been speaking of. I think then we can get a fairly apportioned budget that spreads the pain appropriately and doesn't do long-term damage to this agency and this region. But, of course, now we're getting into how a budget should be put together. My goal here today is simply to make sure everything is on the table so we can construct such a budget. So things like capital funding, you know, those don't need to be on the hearing docket. But I understand why they're being raised, and I don't object to them being referred to also in what we put out there. And I think that it's very important that we have discussion of what the jurisdictions may be asked, because if they're not specifically asked, it's off the table. There, the requirement isn't that it's on the hearing docket. Its requirement is that this agency is clear that that's what it's talking about, and that we notify the jurisdictions that that's one of the things we're thinking of, so they can say no, yes, or maybe.
Members of this committee and the board, this is becoming longer because I think we are doing counter to what we came here to do today. Today we came here to simply come up with a docket to advertise. And I am not more than one voice here, but every discussion that we practically had has been either included in the prior, and we are not precluding any of that at any presentation of a hearing or any communication that goes out by the hearing about the hearing. We had asked that a communication be sent to the jurisdictions regarding what the challenge of our budget, and I think it included everything that we've said here today. It talked about subsidies, it talked about capital, it talked about the hole that the $40 million has and how thoroughly or not thoroughly it has been described. We're only trying to get a docket. We're trying to say, can we advertise to our public everything that we would like to have as part of the discussions over the next couple of meetings? I simply ask that we try and keep our focus on that. I think that, with that said, I think I have a partial amendment on the floor. To add Mr. Benjamin's language as he has heard it clarified by Mr. Zimmerman. Is there a second on that? Was that second by?
Madam Chair, since both of the people on behalf of whom I felt I was trying to get this before the committee have objected to what I put before the committee, I'm more than happy to withdraw it.
I'll second.
Not have that issue.
I'll second.
Your motion now has a second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Well, could you restate the motion?
It's going to be the next Finance Committee soon. Okay. Mr. Benjamin, please repeat your motion.
On
capital and substance.
In this motion, there are two parts to it. One of them is that the $40 million that are undefined be broken up in terms of the subsidy that would have to be given by each jurisdiction if they were to make up the difference. And the second is that we note the fact that another alternative, among many others, would be the use of capital funds for preventive maintenance.
Okay. All those in favor? Mr. Grant.
I'm sorry that this isn't moving at the pace that some people would like it, but these are very important issues for me. And how does this relate to the $34 million in service reductions? Is that left untouched by this motion?
The motion is not addressing the service reductions. It's putting on the table clarity as to the latitude of what funds we can use for, against, with service reductions. So if we come back in time to adopt this budget and we decide what tools out of this menu we use, you can talk about service reductions, you can talk about bus fares, all of those things. So it doesn't tie anything to a particular advertisement. It simply says these are the things that will be advertised. So right now we have a docket with two amendments. All those in favor of the motion that's on the table?
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay. Mr. Graham, I want to give you as much time as
you. Yes, I voted yes.
Okay, thank you. All right. I think that, are there any other motions? I've been given another one that I'm going to add here. And I would pass these to, and I'm going to have a hard time, pass these to staff for additions. In the docket, in the portion of the attachment that includes service reductions, attachment B? E. Attachment E. There are additions to those reductions, and I will tell you, I can't read this. These are, can I say in general, to add a list of additional reductions to bus service on, as seen in attachment E, and the committee accept those as a motion?
I'm sorry, that's
they
not
are specific.
Clear.
I guess I need to be specific. Okay.
Yes.
Reduce the midday 10A and 10B frequency. Reduce peak frequency on routes 10A, 10E, 9E. Reduce peak frequency on route 8. Reconfigure peak service route 7, 28G, 25C. And reduce peak frequency on route 7. Can I have a second on that? Is there a second on the reductions?
A second.
What are the reductions?
They are reductions, additional reductions in bus service as affects Alexandria.
And what are they? This is a proposal by Alexandria to further reduce
service. Further reduce service. Reconfigure and reduce reductions to be advertised. It's simply expanding it for Alexandria's. Okay, we have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Opposed? All right. I think we have all of the additions there. Okay, the original motion is all those in favor of the original motion as amended, and I will try and make sure that I capture them all. First, an amendment to attachment C that included I have to see where they are. Yes, as circulated as provided by Mr. Graham on the motion from Mr. Giancola. The second is the change in attachment. attachment C in the correction. That was consensus. The addition of attachment X and the change to include the use of capital and subsidies as part of the items going out. Have I omitted anything?
What about this deletion? Is that your
service? Oh, and Mr. Yu's service changes. Are there any other? All those in favor of the motion as amended?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No. Please record me as voting no.
Okay, record Mr. Graham is voting no. I think those are all of the items. That still leaves us with one. Any other matter to come before the Finance Committee? Hearing none. The items that have been moved are moved for approval by the board after we adjourn.
And the board meeting will begin in 5 minutes at noon.
We're going to get through this. We're not going to get through this.
One, two. Thank you.
president of the United States, if it was a power
calling to order the special meeting of the Board of Directors. Today is March 4th. The agenda is before all of you. Are there additions, modifications, or changes to the agenda? If not, without objection, the agenda is approved as presented. First item is report by the Finance Administration Committee. Ms. Hudgens.
Mr. Chairman, the Finance Committee met in special meeting, and we have adopted a resolution and attachments to that resolution that provides for an expanded docket to go to public hearing for the purpose of exploring increase in revenues, explore greater latitude in the proposed increase of the reading through the resolution now. Let me just put the resolution on the table, and the resolution is on the table as is and was amended with the following items. The amended resolution includes, in addition, an appendix X. I'm looking for staff to give me my notes, and I lost them. She has my attachment. Can I ask you to? Let me wait until. Yes, thank you. She has my papers. It includes additional bus services that affect the city of Alexandria, and it includes an attachment that attachment C that's been amended to include additional fare changes on Metro bus, Metro rail, and on a fare surcharge and parking fees. Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the resolution as attached in our package.
And as brought forward by the Finance Committee to the Board?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Downey. Is there discussion of this action?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Graham.
Mr. Chairman, I move to eliminate $18.3 million in bus service reductions and $15.4 million in rail service reductions and replace that $33.7 million with the use of capital funds to apply to capital purposes, which are now covered by the operating budget.
Is there a second to this motion? Without a second, this motion dies. Are there any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to leave the following comment. This was a long committee meeting, but I think the most important part that we want to say about this committee meeting is that We recognize that we have a difficult budget. We recognize that the solutions are not going to be easy, but we are, through this effort from the Finance Committee, offering the greatest amount of latitude to have a discussion with our customers and our stakeholders. In doing so, the message that should go out is not that this board is acting upon its budget today, but rather it is putting forward into the public discussion service cuts, which are hard for all of us to bear, multiple changes of revenue sources that we're willing to consider, even though we're not all satisfied with them, in order that we can come up with a budget that will do what as much of our customers have said over the past discussions with us in public hearings in this surcharge time, that they are looking for an improvement in service, they're willing to pay, and that we need to talk with our own jurisdictions about how best we all can help with that. While this does not confirm any of that discussion for the customers, it gives them the opportunity to look at a multitude of revenue sources and a multitude of cuts that are before them. And I hope what it will do is give us an engagement that will allow us to provide the most equitable budget in terms of how we will continue to serve and maintain this authority, and our willingness to understand how the ability to pay for those services through the things that we have before us today.
Ms. Hutchins, thank you for that summary of what we've done. If I were to put that in a few words, I think what we're saying is we are putting forward here a proposal where we truly want to hear what the public has to say. This proposal is substantially larger in dollars than what we need to do to close the gap in our budget, and it is done deliberately so that we can hear which of the various things that we're proposing the public supports and the public objects to. None of us wants to increase fares. None of us wants to decrease service. But we do want to hear from our public, out of the various selections that we're putting out there, what kind of support they have or which portions of it. And that will inform the board as it makes decisions later this year. With that said,
Mr.
are we
Chairman,
ready to vote?
Oh, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Graham again.
I would like to make just a very brief statement before I vote, by way of explanation of how I'm going to vote. This system is the region's success story. And I am very aware of my responsibility to consider regional as well as local issues and interests. But the fact of the matter is that this system was historically established as a commuter system to serve people coming into the District of Columbia and going home at night. And when I came on this board in 1999, January 2nd, 1999, I found a system that was very much embedded in that type of approach to transportation. We have worked hard from the District of Columbia to ensure that there were also advantages in terms of transit for D.C. residents. And the proposal that I have before us today would eliminate some of our greatest accomplishments in this regard. First, a three-year effort. It took 3 years to get this system to stay open until 3 a.m. on weekends. It took 3 years, and it took a lot of money from D.C. taxpayers in order to make that happen. Now we are suggesting that that be eliminated. It took a year and also a year and a half and a lot of other money to get the Yellow Line extended in a way where it was relevant to Center City, D.C., including stations within the ward I represent. The buses are extremely important to the District of Columbia. The elimination of extensive bus service, including the total elimination of H1, is a move that I cannot accept. And particularly, if this had to be done, if all of this had to be put on the table, it would be different. But the fact of the matter is that we have available capital dollars. We can do what New Jersey Transit has done times 10. We can do what the state of Maryland did last year and presumably will do again this year to balance their operating budget through the skillful and effective use of capital dollars. And we could avoid all of this insofar as the impact
not only in the District of Columbia, but elsewhere. So what bothers me most is the fact that we are doing things that, in my opinion, we don't need to do. We are imposing pain that is not necessary. We're going to have a debate and a controversy that could be avoided by this simple action. And I don't take lightly the fact that we've got to commit our capital dollars to capital purposes. And the fact of the matter is that we have $711 million. This would take away from that just a small percentage of that money and put it into this particular purpose. And so for that reason, and also, of course, the impact on those least able to pay, which is the bus riders. 2 years ago, I resisted a proposal that was made at that time to increase bus fares. I'm very proud of the fact that there was no increase in bus fares at that time. And now we're suggesting an increase of 28%. I think there will be an uproar in the District of Columbia, and others can speak for their jurisdictions, over this proposal. But what bothers me the most is that by a simple act of this board, I couldn't even get a second for the motion I made, but by that simple act, we could avoid all of this. And thus, Mr. Chairman, I will be voting no on this proposal today.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Zimmerman?
Mr. Chairman, I think that calls for at least some of us to point out again that we are not endorsing any of the things that are being sent to hearing today. And as I have already indicated, there are large parts of this that I know I am not going to support in the end. I believe that what we have in front of us is, in fact, alarming, and it will cause alarm, and it should. If we had simply one bad year to get through, and we could avoid all this by doing something that you might not really think is the best thing to do, but you can get by, you can get away with it for a year, and then go back, then there would be good reason to avoid any of the uproar that we may in fact cause and will have that Mr. Graham is concerned about. But the fact is we don't have a one-year problem. We have a permanent systemic problem. This agency is chronically, continually, annually underfunded. We are dealing with all kinds of problems apart from this year's budget. We're not consumed with this, we're consumed with everything else that is a reflection of that fact. We need to have a big conversation with the public here about how much this service is worth to them, what role it should play in the decisions that are made all around the region, because they need to decide, is this worth paying for? Not just this year, not just to get through next year's budget, but long-term and permanently. That's why capital is such a factor. I mean, if you put off some capital expenditures for a year, it's not necessarily the end of the world. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about something that is already underfunded by large amounts that we have calculated, that we have had put in front of us. We know what it is. We know that things are failing every day that people are complaining about because for the last 10, 15, 20 years, not enough money has been put into them. So this is a discussion that is ultimately not simply about the fiscal year 2011 budget. It is about the permanent place of Metro in the National Capital Region. We need to have that conversation because we need to come to a permanent solution. And I don't think we can get there if we avoid the difficult talk we will now have that will focus on the fiscal 2011 budget itself. That's why I'll be supporting the motion.
Are there any other comments? Mr. Linton?
Unfortunately, Mr. Chairman, all I have is my voice and not a vote, but let me just say this, that in the past, we have struggled with the time that I've been on this board, and it's been nowhere near the time that Mr. Graham has been on this board. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I will say this, that clearly we've had these struggles with our budget repeatedly. And very often we have come to a conclusion of what the budget should be without having the big conversation. We have made decisions here, some of them because of our own fairly, I wouldn't say narrow, but our perspective that we've had within our jurisdictions or our philosophy of government, which has reflected the vote and the position that we've done. So we've often eliminated the opportunity for the conversation. So I think that by trying to shape the budget today and any amendments that were designed to do that, would be, once again, closing the debate, restricting the debate. I think what we're trying to do here is actually have a full-blown debate. Hear from our customers, which we've tried to do recently, and that's reached a good result. I like to have that debate, and I like to have that full debate with everything on the table. And I think what this board and that committee, the Finance Committee, has chosen to do is to do exactly that. And I think the public should come out, hear it, respond, and then this board will have an opportunity to make a decision. But we shouldn't make that decision before that occurs.
Anybody else? Nobody else ready to speak? I will then ask for a vote. All those in favor of the motion?
Yes, I do. So there are a couple of routes that run just in the District of Columbia. Again, I apologize for making these amendments at the last moment, just brought to my attention by our team. One is the X3 route, to eliminate the X3 route and keep the X1. The second is to add to the section that says restructure service, that's item 4-02, add the following to the description of change, that is, reroute the N2, that's not specifically stated in the attachment, and add a line H2-H3 reroute, again, just for clarity in what goes out to the public, and then add a line to H6, which would say reroute and shorten span of service. So all items that are in for advertisement but need further clarity.
Mr. Albert, these need to be clarified substantially more to be part of our docket, correct? You're
yes.
Saying that you want to do that with the staff. And are you stating here that none of these has any effect on any other jurisdiction?
To the best of my knowledge, these all only impact the District of Columbia.
Because I'm not fully familiar with the routes, but I thought the N2 also affected Maryland. I don't know what the answer there is. From staff? Okay. All right.
Those are my proposed amendments.
And you're moving that right now?
I am moving that.
Ms. Hutchins?
I will second the amendment, and I'd like to speak to it. I know that we're talking about services that are only in the District of Columbia. We're talking about a docket that's going out for the Metropolitan Washington Authority. And sometimes we think that the only people who ride are the people who live where the services are, and they might really be services that others might use. And I will take the motion that we're amending it, that you see it as an advantage to serving the District of Columbia. And I say that that's probably a good thing, because it just might be those folks from Virginia that come to the District of Columbia and might use those services. And I really say that really to expand this conversation, that this is really about everyone who needs to use the service, and that as we look at this, it is broad enough for all of us. So if that's what you need in order to provide the internal service to the district, that's fine with me. I think it's just the fact that as we look at this, it's a broader piece than that.
Absolutely.
Ms. Hutchins, are you seconding that motion?
I did second it.
Okay. So it's been moved by Mr. Albert, seconded by Ms. Hutchins. Is there any more discussion on this amendment? If not, let's vote on the amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Okay, we're back to the main motion. All those in favor of the main motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
We have a single no. And this motion is passed. We have one other item on our agenda. You do have before you a resolution for the appointment of a new interim general manager, Richard R. Sarles, who has been the chief executive officer of New Jersey Transit. And this proposal is now before us. I will move this item. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Any comments?
I just want to say how pleased we are at this selection. And, you know, there has been, we certainly are going to miss our general manager and all of what he has contributed to this authority. But feeling confident in the knowledge that we have a seasoned, experienced, dedicated person stepping up for this interim period is very reassuring to us. And we're very pleased that this has happened. I want to acknowledge this board because the board moved with alacrity. It moved with focus. We reached a consensus very rapidly. And the result, I think, is very, very positive for the public interest and for public transit in this region. And so I congratulate our new interim manager, and I congratulate this board for its effective action. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Are there any other comments?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Hewlett.
I know we have another opportunity to thank Mr. Cato, so I will save my accolades, of which there are many, for Mr. Cato, for the stellar job he did during his tenure as general manager. But I do want to welcome Mr. Sarles and to say thank you for his willingness to step in. I mean, there are those who might not have stepped in given some of our challenges during this time, and I'd like to thank him for coming and assisting this board and assisting our many, many riders during this very tumultuous time. And I thank him for his courage. He obviously has a tremendous expertise, but I do think it's important to say thank you to him now for stepping up to the plate.
Thank you, Ms. Hewlett. Any other comments? Mr. Yule.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I echo the comments of my colleagues and would also encourage the many employees, the outstanding employees here at WMATA, and the riders to particularly embrace the interim general manager. He has a lot of work ahead of him to do, challenging work, and continue to partner and collaborate with this board. But his job cannot be done effectively and efficiently without having the support of the senior management staff all the way down to the line operator. So again, we need the support of the riders. So we welcome Mr. Sarles and wish him the best.
Thank you, Mr. Yule. Are we ready to vote? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Unanimous vote for Richard R. Sarles. Let me announce that as immediately when we adjourn, we will set up a news conference, and as soon as we're fully set up, Mr. Sarles will be presented to the press. You'll have your opportunity to ask him as many questions as you wish, at least as long as he can manage to stand there. Thank you, all members of the board. I think we did a really, really solid job in terms of making sure that we found the right person at the right time and that we all worked together very effectively in assuring that this transition, which will end up in a new general manager at a later date, has been done effectively. And thank you all for the work you've done to make this happen and for all of us to work together. This meeting is adjourned.
Is exactly what we all agreed to. 25,000.
Have it in scribbles.
Per month.
Okay, so tell me, just quickly. So
you mean this right here?
And everything else.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't have the
back. In your back. Okay.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
What I'm saying.
No, we're just clarifying what we wanted to do with those particular buses.
Maybe.
We're just going to clarify.
I can give you a copy of it because we haven't signed it yet. We're about to. I don't know what the privacy issues are. I don't know.
Oh, it's always
that's what I'm saying. I don't know.
I think each hearing has probably something.
Oh,
I'll be happy to answer that if that's an issue.
Yeah,
I do.
Let me
do it for everybody. Okay. That was the whole point in the press conference, is to make sure we share it once.
All right, can you guys tilt the chairs to face this way?
I understand your point.
Perfect, thank you. We invite everybody else to stay if you'd like.
Check 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Mic check. Can you give me one while I'm on?
I'm gonna finish with you. Okay. Give me 1 second. I'm gonna say I'm gonna finish with you because I had the questions, but go ahead.
Mic check 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing. Mic check 1, 2, 3, 4. Everybody up? Chris, you good? Dave, check 1, 2. Oh.
Anybody need a white balance? You got the white balance? Okay, what we've got here is we're going to have Mr. Peter Benjamin, board chairman. He will be introducing Mr. Sarles. They will each make some remarks, and then they will stay for some questions, and there will be time for one-on-one. Okay, Mr. Benjamin, thank you.
Today's decision by the board is a significant step in our continuing efforts to improve safety and address Metro's financial, management, and service challenges. It represents our determination to move forward while we're searching for a new general manager. We've identified an experienced transit professional who will hit the ground running while we continue looking for the best possible permanent general manager. Fortunately, Richard Sarles is the right man at the right time, and we're very lucky to get him. Let me say a few things about Richard. His experience at New Jersey Transit and at Amtrak give him the knowledge, the management skills, and the judgment necessary to work with our employees and other stakeholders to correct the course of our system and regain the confidence and trust of our riders and of our workforce. He's an engineer and he has an MBA, a critical combination of management and analytical skills that Metro needs at this moment. He has led major capital improvement programs and understands how the replacement and rehabilitation activities we are undertaking to improve safety and reliability need to be managed. Mr. Sarles is retiring from an agency which he headed that is comparable in size and in complexity to Washington Metro. New Jersey Transit has more than 11,000 employees who provide commuter rail, light rail, bus, and paratransit service, and capital and operating budgets totaling nearly $3 billion annually. He knows that the first priority is safety, and he joins us with a clear commitment to make safety the top priority throughout the system. He's been at New Jersey Transit since 2002, first as an assistant executive director and in charge of capital programs and planning, and then as head of the agency since 2007. During the time he led New Jersey Transit, he focused on providing safe, reliable, customer-focused service in a cost-effective manner. He introduced new buses and rail cars using customer-influenced design. He has all the skills we need to move forward while we conduct our search for a new general manager. As interim general manager, he's not expected to solve every problem. Rather, he's expected to build a foundation upon which the future general manager and the Metro team will base their long-term efforts. To achieve this, he's being empowered and authorized to take all necessary steps to promote safety and improve performance. Metro must move forward to improve safety operations for our customers and our employees. The board will give Mr. Sarles both the responsibility and the authority to take whatever measures are necessary to accomplish that goal. Richard Sarles has a passion for transportation and the ability and know-how to help Metro deal with the critical issues that confront us. We are continuing our national and international search for the best possible permanent general manager. This decision must be thorough, thoughtful, and far-reaching. It cannot be rushed. We are in the process of engaging a professional search firm, and we will ensure transparency as we move forward. Because we expect that this search will take some time, the role of the interim general manager is critical. That's why we're very fortunate to have a transit professional of Mr. Sarles' skills and talent. I believe Rich Sarles' selection is a truly significant action, and I'm very, very pleased to introduce to you Richard Sarles. Richard.
Good afternoon, everyone. And I'm really pleased and excited to be here, and I'm proud to have been selected as the interim general manager for WMATA. Certainly, there are significant issues ahead of us, safety being the starting point. But working together, working with staff, working with many groups that are interested, working with outside people who are giving reports to WMATA, we're going to work very hard, and I'm going to work very hard, to understand the issues and then to develop effective solutions and move forward and take action. And I'm certain in doing this that I can rely on the thousands of employees at Metro who work hard every day, are dedicated to this place, and want to see a good operation. And I look forward to working with them in the months ahead. And I've been asked, why would I want this job, and if I want the permanent GM job? And let me be very clear first that I'm not a candidate for the permanent general manager job. But I'm taking this position as the interim GM because Metro is a vital public transportation system, not only in this region, but as a symbol for this entire country. And I believe I can make a valuable contribution in the efforts underway to correct problems and rebuild confidence. I've devoted my entire career to public transportation, from the day I got out of college. Actually, before I even got out of college, I worked summers in a public transportation agency. And the opportunity to serve in Washington on this system that I saw being built, as you many of you did, or the older ones did anyhow, saw being built, went into operation, and it's such a magnificent system. I wanted to come here as I retire from New Jersey Transit, as I said, and spend the months that it takes while the board looks for a permanent general manager to provide my experience and expertise and help lead this agency. Thank you very much.
Our contract with Mr. Sorrells is from March 29th, when he will show up. Until such time as we find a permanent general manager, the contract lasts for a year. It can be renewed. His salary is $25,000 a month for all the time between now and when we do find a new general manager. He also receives, because he will be living here temporarily, housing. We will pay for a one-bedroom apartment and his moving expenses. All other benefits are identical to those that are given to our senior managers.
Yes?
Why wouldn't you want to find a job? Is it true that it's a job that people are not eager to take?
Well, I suspect there'll be people very eager to take this job. But frankly, I just retired from New Jersey Transit. Look at the gray hair on my head. And I do look forward to someday actually retiring. And I would hope that that's not too far in the future. But I just saw this as a great opportunity, as I said before. You know, I've been in public transportation all my life. This is a great system. It's a, you know, it's a nation's capital. And I want to come here and do what I can do to lead this in the interim period while the board searches for a new leader. 5 years from now, you know, I would hope that that person is still working here and I'm sitting on the beach somewhere. The first priority and the top priority at any public transportation agency is safety. And given what has occurred, the events that have occurred over the last, you know, months, year, that's where my focus is really going to be. And it's going to be focusing on the fundamentals of operating an agency, the safety, reliability, of course, the budget. But that's where I want to just focus, you know, bring in a few people because we have a few vacant positions, strengthen it, and just set the firm foundation for the next person who comes into be the permanent GM.
Same question?
Safety has been the mantra. Mm-hmm. We've heard it for a long time. And yet, the Metro has had a pretty bad year.
There's no magic about safety. Safety takes a lot of hard work. It takes attention at all levels in the organization, from the person operating a bus or operating a train to the board, to me, to the senior management. And it's focusing on all the little details that goes with that. It's focusing on the training, make sure the rules are right, make sure people follow the rules. And more than that is people have to think about safety every day they're on the job. And what they're doing, is it the right way to do it? Is there a better way to do it safely? And that kind of dialogue has to go on. It also has to be a rigorous examination. In my initial period being here, I'm going to focus on not only listening to our employees, which is very important, as to their safety suggestions, but to the other, the commuter group, I understand you have advisory council, I want to listen to them. There, David Gunn, I understand, is here doing a report. I want to get his recommendations, certainly out of the NTSB, there are recommendations. And I will be talking to people and other people, including probably some of you in the press, about what your perspectives are so that we can then not only put a plan together, but act on the plan. And that's where I come from as results. And that's what we're going to have to work on. I think any CO job and any public transportation agency in this country has an element, significant element of politics to it in dealing with the politics. So that'll be a little different here, a little different stage, and I will learn to deal with the and actually interact with the different leaders here and get their input and also give them my input as the way I think this should move forward. But I will tell you that my focus is on the fundamentals here, safety, reliable operation, and that's where I'm going to be spending most of my time. Actually, in talking with Peter about where my one-bedroom apartment can be located, my specification is that it's near a metro stop that I can walk to. You can check back on my history. I am a user of public transportation in my previous job. Conductors knew me very well on the trains, and I've done that all my life. I got to tell you, a little bit of personal background and why I'm interested in public transportation have been. It's made it my career. Is, you know, I grew up as a kid in a family that didn't have a car in North Jersey. And if I wanted to get to the movies, if we wanted to go to a restaurant, my mother wanted to go to work, it was all by bus. When I went to college, it was by bus and subway. I was a transit dependent, I guess is the term these days. But I saw personally the importance of public transportation to people. And I, when I chose to go, you know, graduate from college, I focused only on getting a job in the quasi-public private sector in public transportation because I think it's so important to people. That's why I'm here. Yes?
Have you had a chance, well, when you read your book, Senator McCulkey has been one of many critics saying that the Metro has not been open enough and not given enough access to investigators providing oversight. What's your view on openness and access?
In favor of both. I will tell you that in the organizations I've worked for, they happen to be all fall under the regulation of the FRA. New Jersey Transit, Amtrak, and the Port Authority of New York, New Jersey PATH piece. I'm used to oversight. I'm used to the fact you need to provide open access. And frankly, the transparency and the openness brings out more ideas, gets it out faster. You know, I don't want to hide problems. That's the worst thing you can do, especially when you're dealing with safety and reliability. You got to get them out there. And then you got to deal with them. And you can't be afraid of them. You got to deal with them. You got to solve the issue, the problems. Yes?
Question over here.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, John Shrepp at NBC 4. Mm-hmm. What problems with safety have you dealt with in the past that have carried?
Well, every day you operate a railroad, a bus operation, there's always safety concerns. Whether it's buses, you know, getting involved in accidents, the tragedy of death when either an employee or a passenger or a trespasser, you know, is killed. These are things you deal with every day. The thing is to try to get out in front of it, to understand where the risks are, where the safety issues are, so that it does not become an accident, it does not become an injury, it does not become a fatality. But that's what you have to get out in front of, and it's something that all staff has to focus on. Sure. In the early part of my tenure as executive director of New Jersey Transit, we had a worker fatality. That's the worst. I mean, to go, it was the worst part of my entire career. To have to go to the family, which I did, and talk to them about, you know, their father, the husband's death at work, to go to the funeral and have to speak about that person. Well, I certainly, you know, I want to talk about what he had meant to the company. He was a long-term employee. But the idea to have dealt with that personally, you know, it was tough. It was really tough. And what we did, as we would do with a much even less tragic incident, is we immediately, you know, issued safety bulletins. We immediately had to stand down the engineering department because this person happened to be a track worker. And at all levels of supervision, met with all the employees rail engineering division, and went over all the safety rules and procedures so we wouldn't face this again. We also, because I like outside eyes, going back to maybe the comment question before, I like outside eyes because no matter how much you work and are familiar with a particular area, you don't see everything. You just don't see it. So you bring in outside eyes. And in that case, we brought in APTA peer review group, and they saw some things, even though we're FRA compliant in terms of our procedures. They saw some best practices from other agencies that we then incorporate into our procedures. But that's the kind of reaction, as soon as you can, you know, you do deal with.
Thank you.
this is a, I heard, caught most of the discussion. And this is a topic that's going on, discussion that's going on in practically every transit agency in the United States. Certainly I was dealing with it in New Jersey Transit. My view has always been, and I think it's the view you, views you heard expressed here by the board, is that service cuts and fares are the absolute last resort. But in the economic times we're dealing with, these are the things that have to be considered. They're tough decisions. They're not made lightly. Certainly, as I mentioned, my personal background, I feel, you know, these decisions. But in the end, you only have so much resources, and you try to deliver as, absolutely as much service as you can with those resources, but you have to live within that, in that budget. And where we end up is after having the input from the public and other groups, then we, the board, ultimately will make that decision, and I will have input into that, hearing, but having heard the input first. Obviously, since I haven't learned enough about Metro yet, let me just answer in a more general fashion. Coming from northern New Jersey and New York City, I think we're just as sensitive and have lived through some, you know, major terror incidents just like you have in Washington, D.C. And what I learned from that is, and we also have a police force at New Jersey Transit, it's what you need is for the police to work closely with the other agencies, the FBI, other police agencies, certainly in New Jersey, adjacent to New York City, have New York City police. They have to work very closely together, share intelligence, understand what's going on. Intelligence is such an important piece of this because when you run a system, any transit system, you're vulnerable, just as anything else is vulnerable. Highways are vulnerable. So it's working together among the police agencies to understand what's going on, have the intelligence, and to react accordingly. And I will tell you, based on my own experience, having gotten phone calls different times of day and night, they come up, they're handled, and there's a lot of great professionals in this country dealing with that issue.
We have time for about three more
as part of my learning experience when I come here, I will certainly look at that.
Anybody else?
Push on Metro from the PGU. I shared with your learning experience. How familiar are you with the Metro system? And if you're going to take over a duty March 29th, I give you a couple weeks to prepare. What is what's on your agenda? How you can do that?
Sure. My, in terms of my familiarity, as I said, from probably the earliest days of Metro on my visits to Washington, I've used Metro, always impressed by it. Again, as I said before, my view here, my plan of action here is to meet with the different groups, the employees, outside constituencies, learn their concerns, learn it rapidly. I mean, I don't have a lot of time. Learn it rapidly because I just don't want to go off, you know, with ideas, but not really having the information. I'm an engineer, you know, I got to sort of understand things. But I want to focus on understanding those concerns, understand what already is in progress. The board, John, have acted already on certain things. There are more recommendations coming in. And then I want our team, the senior staff, others here, to then implement the recommendations that we feel will do the most in the shortest period of time.
Sure. Just want to make one clarification because I was not clear earlier. Although Mr. Sarles will arrive on the 29th of March, our current general manager will continue to be the general manager until April 2nd,
and Mr. Searles will be working with him in a transition period so that he has an opportunity to see all the different things that you need to see and learn about in that period, and then the day after he will become the official general manager.
And I'll just add one thing to that. Obviously, this has moved very quickly, as was mentioned before, but I will tell you that I have friends that live here. I have friends that work in and around WMATA, and I've been talking to them, so I'm getting a feel, and it will become much more intense once I start work. Who asked that question? Channel 9. That's a pretty personal question. And I'll also tell you, I'm more of a baseball fan than a football fan. But I will say this. I will say this. That if I have the opportunity to get to some sporting events, I will root for the home team.
Okay, the media in the room, we have a news release that we're handing out if you don't already have it. For those people listening on the web, we will be posting the news release with some details shortly, and the media are welcome to stay. Mr. Benjamin will be here for a brief while and will be willing to answer questions. I see some other board members are here as well. I'm certain they are also very eager to answer any questions you may have, and, of course, Mr. Charles as well. Thank you.